Welcome to the Project Zion podcast. This podcast explores the unique spiritual and theological gifts Community of Christ offers for today's world.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Project Zion podcast. This is Brittany Mangelson, and I will be your host for today. And we have on Kelly Padilla as part of our Fair Trade series, where we talk about faith transitions. So Kelly and I have been Facebook friends for a couple of years now, but we've never really talked, especially on this level. I've just seen her posts, she's seen my posts, and I have had Kelly on my list of people that I've wanted to have on for one of these interviews, and we finally got it worked out. So Kelly, I'm really, really excited that you are here today.
Thank you. It's a pleasure. Thanks for inviting me.
So why don't you just tell us a little bit about yourself? Tell us where you are, who you are, what you do, that kind of stuff.
Okay. Well, I am here in North Carolina, born and raised, currently a member of Community of Christ for the past couple of years. In the past, being raised in this area, I grew up Baptist like everyone else in my African-American family. About 10 years, I was a member of the Mormon Church. And I'm a single mom now. I have two lovely daughters, both in elementary school, third and fifth grade. And I'm actually a pharmacist by trade. I used to work in the pharmacy long ago, but now I'm a clinical research pharmacist where I work for a pharma company doing clinical research in respiratory.
Nice. Thank you. I didn't realize that my girls were right in between your girls, my twins, okay. Fourth grade. So mm-hmm. I have a feeling they would all get along quite well, yeah. And probably get into a lot of mischief if they
exactly
play together. Okay. So Kelly, if you're okay with it, we're just going to start at the beginning, wherever the beginning looks like for you. And I'm just curious to know, you said you were born Baptist. So I'm curious to know what that looked like for you growing up. How involved were you in church life? What did God or church look like to you when mm-hmm. you were growing up?
Well, initially, church for me meant going to my grandmother's church. So some of my earliest memories would be spending the night with grandma, who also lived in the same town where we grew up. And she, you know, went to the old church, you know, that was, you know, the family church that went all the way back to, you know, slavery as far as people could remember. And then I had cousins who went to the same family church, you know, kind of, it was kind of a family thing, you know, out in the country. And since we lived in the city, it was just something we didn't really attend. And from what I understand, I started asking my parents about, you know, what's our church? Why don't we go to church? And, you know, both of my parents grew up, you know, out in the country on the farm. And so church was not just, you know, a faith. It was a way of life. It was, you know, part of the culture, and that's just what you did. And I don't want to speak for my parents, but I think for my dad, it seemed like he was just burned out and was just not, you know, not going, but they weren't going to stop me. So my mom started taking me to church in town. And that's kind of where I started, you know, in the little children's choir and just developed my faith that way. You know, in the Baptist tradition, it's kind of expected that when you turn 12, that you get baptized and kind of formally join the church. That was when I first started, I guess, rebelling. I was not into that. I just, you know, I didn't feel like if I did it, it would be authentic. And it wasn't until just some random Sunday when I was in high school where I just did it, and I shocked my mom and my whole family because I didn't talk to anyone about it. It was just like, now it's time, and I just went and did it. So the first time I was baptized was in high school before I went to college, in that kind of family setting.
Can I ask mm-hmm. what baptism looked like in that church?
Well, it was, you know, full immersion. It was a, you know, a separate ceremony with myself and some other kids who were around that time, who were much younger than me at the time, since I was high schooler, they were, you know, middle school aged. And, you know, we had a program with some songs, some hymns, some prayers. The minister, you know, did a brief sermon, and then we each got baptized one by one. Afterwards, In the Baptist church, there's a lot of different creeds and things, and then we had a kind of a covenant that's always on the wall, and I had to read that, and I remember as I was reading it, it was like the first time I ever looked at it, so I was kind of shy, like, whoa, it says that, and then like the whole like congregation, people who came to it, everyone kind of stood around us, and there was one big prayer for all of us. Hmm. Yeah, that's what I remember. Yeah,
cool. Well, keep going.
So then I hit the road and left town. Went to college here in North Carolina, UNC, Carolina Tar Heels. Had a great experience there. And it's kind of, expected, I don't know if that's the right word. But, growing up, African-American in the South, it's very common to just kind of find your church wherever you move to. And so I went to the one Baptist church, growing up. So now I'm in college, I needed to find whatever church I'm going to go to in college. And I remember the friends I hung out with, we all kind of went church shopping on our own. Like, okay, after we got settled in, we did all the partying we wanted to do. Like, you know what, we should probably find a church family. And so we visited a couple of different churches in town. I don't think I ever joined any of them at that time. But it was, every once in a while, just kind of a nice to have in a place to go sometimes. But then during this time, I was also, studying hard, pre-pharmacy, but I was also in marching band, the Carolina Tar Heels. And in the band, there was a kind of a sub, club called Music Makers. And so I didn't realize at the time that the Music Makers was like a faith-based club that went with the band. And so I went with them one time to, I think it was on campus, like in the union, and it was fun. And then one time I went with them to a revival, and it was actually at the church of one of the members of the group, kind of near where I grew up. So we all went out deep into the country again. And I think that revival, and that, growing up Baptist, I'd been to several, revivals where you spend the whole week, worshiping, and then you have a big, big kind of finale, worship that Friday night. This one, I don't know, it was kind of the first time I felt like I had a true spiritual experience. And even though I had already been officially baptized and officially, joined the church, the broader church, it was the first time I felt converted. And actually in part of the program they had at the end of the whole thing, the minister had everyone kind of close their eyes and look down, and he was just asking different questions. If you feel like this, stand up, and everyone stand up. And it's like, if something like this, I can't remember what he said, but, if this happens, keep standing. And so eventually people start sitting down. At the end, it was myself and one other person, still standing. And he invited us, after the program to talk to us more. And it was really the first time I really felt like I was truly, a member of the fold. And, I loved it. But then I wasn't formally a member of any church, but that was the first time I truly felt like I was in the body of Christ.
Well, and it sounds like having that support, that community, was probably really important to you as a young adult. Mm-hmm. And even if it wasn't something you formally joined, just knowing that there was a church family out there, I can imagine, would be at least a little bit comforting.
Yeah. And I think, growing up, I think maybe part of it was because at the very beginning, I didn't have a formal church. My, identity with being, communing with God was not tied to a particular church denomination or congregation even. It was just something directly between me and God. So I guess now, the term people use is, have faith but not really religious. I think I was a little more religious than that, but not formally, a member of a church. So back then, I would hear the phrase join church. It was kind of interpreted as being a member of a congregation, not necessarily joining with God. I felt like I'd already done that. I guess probably the phrase that was used more was being saved. I was saved, which means I had been baptized and accepted, Jesus Christ, but I hadn't joined a church, a church family. So anyway, during that time, I was still in college, just living my best life. I graduated and was working. And I will fast forward maybe a couple years. It was actually September 10th. 2001. And by this time I'm working, you know, as a pharmacist at Duke Hospital. And I just had an overwhelm. This is kind of, I guess, my unnatural experience that you just can't explain other than through faith. And anyway, it was September 10th, a Monday. And I just remember having just a feeling of loathing that day for some reason. You know, I'm single. This is before marriage, before kids, just myself. And I remember I kept leaving to go to the bathroom to even cry. I don't know why I was just so upset about something. And at the time, the hospital had this little train that went under the ground to go to the, another part of the hospital. And I remember being underground waiting for this train, and some random lady just came up to me and just started chatting it up with me. And I had a look on my face, but she was just like, you know, sometimes we go through bad times. I just want to let you know that God loves you and everything's going to be okay. And you know, just wanted to share that with you. And so we chatted it up, and it turns out she was a nurse, but it was in some new program at Duke where they were kind of researching the relationship between faith and prayer and healing. So she was in that program. And so then I thought, well, you know, it was nice chatting, you know, I'll never see you again. Then I get to the other side of the hospital and go eat my lunch. And my second little angel that came up, still the same day, some older gentleman who wanted to come sit with me. And I remember instinctively thinking, is this old guy trying to flirt with me? You know, like, please, you know, I already have a dad. You know, why are you coming to sit with me? But anyway, he finagled himself to sit with me and started talking to me. And this was the part that really kind of stopped me. He said, you know, sometimes sad things will happen in your life, and no matter what happens, I just felt like I really need to tell you that God loves you. This was the second time within 30 minutes. And he said, things that, you know, where you may think the world is coming to an end, just want to let you know that God loves you. And then, you know, I felt much better, went about my day. And then the next morning, September 11th.
Oh, and wow.
Yeah. And just all sorts of, I mean, we all remember that, all sorts of just fear and anxiety that early morning, not knowing what was happening, you know, before I realized that it was a terrorist attack. And the only thing that was going on in my mind was, no matter what, God loves you and you will be okay. And it was just such a special, you know, time just thinking, you know, just thinking about that song, you know, His Eyes on the Sparrow. Some of the most, you know, most tragic things happened that day, the biggest things, you know, in our country's history. And I felt like in all of that, God took the time to send not one, but two people to me to comfort me in my, you know, in just my day of just feeling down. And, you know, never forget that feeling of just the individual, personal love that each of us, you know, can feel from God. And I think after that experience, I think that was the first time I really seriously started thinking, wow, I really need to, you know, pay attention to this and really do some changes in my life to reflect what I believe, you know? So I think that's where things started really started changing for me, you know, faith-wise. So anyway, all of the things that came with September 11th, you know, were happening. You remember the anthrax scare, and just before we knew who was tied to the attacks, just all of that, you know, I was, you know, everyone was watching the news every day, you know, all day, you know, when you could. And at any rate, one of those days I had the TV on, of course, wanting, you know, I was at home hanging out, doing chores, and the TV was on because I'm listening to news, and the commercial comes on, talks about Jesus Christ, you know, came to the Americas. And, you know, if you want to find out more, you know, call this number. And it was, for me, time stopped because several years prior, when I was in high school, I'm kind of going back in time, sorry about that, but this would have been, yeah, 11th grade, maybe 12th grade. In 11th and 12th grade, I attended a high school that was a residential school of science and math. So that was the focus of the school, but for English and social studies, subjects were merged. And the course was about ancient religions or ancient Mesopotamian culture, I think, but started, you know, from ancient times. And So social studies and English. And I remember in that class, we all had a year-long assignment where we had to just come up with something and kind of write a thesis. It was our like our one big project to learn how to do the research and do a year-long thesis. So the topic that I chose was a question. The title was, were the Native Americans one of the lost tribes of Israel?
You were setting yourself right up.
Yeah. Now, mind you, I'm a Baptist girl. Yeah. Never heard about the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Barely, you know, at this time, you know, in the, this would have been the early 90s, late 80s, early 90s, barely even knew like one or two Muslim friends, knew one Jewish girl. That was it. My whole life was, you know, Baptist, you know, in summer camps, I'd maybe meet the occasional Methodist or something, but that's it. And so, anyway, so I spent a whole year working on that. And then years later, I see this commercial saying, you know, Jesus spent time in America. So just because of that, you know, just kind of stopped me and made me curious. And so that was when I first reached out to talk to the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And, you know, they were calling me, oh, you're the golden investigator. Because, you know, again, from my Baptist background, it's very common to just church shop. And so I called and I talked to, I guess, a sister missionary. And I got a copy of Book of Mormon. And then a few weeks later, I called. I was like, okay, so where can I go to join your church? And I think, well, I know. And after the fact, like months later, they thought that I was calling to prank them. So they didn't take me seriously, but I was serious. I was like, okay, so where are you guys? You know, do you have you know, you have a place local? And they were like, well, we've got to send, you know, some missionaries out to talk to you and teach you some lessons to make sure this is what you want to do. Okay, well, here's my address. You know, when can you come? Tomorrow? When you're coming? And so the first appointment we made, no one came. So then I called back. No one came. What's going on? Oh, we're sorry. We're sorry. We couldn't find you. Second time, no one came. And so then the third time, and I called like 5 minutes before, okay, I'm here, I'm ready, where are you? They didn't come. So then life gets busy, and I just didn't think about it for a few weeks. So again, this is like, so September 11th happened, then October, November, I'm trying to meet with these missionaries. So then in December, still working at Duke Hospital, I get an automated kind of Christmas, like an e-card, Christmas card from the church, and it's kind of animated, and it shows like Bethlehem with the star, and it's like, we wish you Merry Christmas. And so I knew, I thought it was nice, and this was when social media and email was new. So I thought, oh, this is so beautiful. So I forwarded it to the pharmacy department at Duke Hospital, which at that time, the pharmacy department consisted of 100 pharmacists, 200 pharmacy technicians. It was just kind of like, you know, every once in a while people would forward stuff, you know, just wishing everyone happy holidays, basically. And so about a week later, I bump into one of the pharmacy technicians in the hall. And he was actually an older gentleman, kind of quasi-retired, I think just working there to get the benefits. And he stops me in the hallway, you know, tears in his eyes, and is just so overwhelmed. And he's just like, oh my goodness, Kelly, thank you so much for sending me the Christmas card. It was just so thoughtful. I didn't know that you knew that I was a member of the church. And it just, I seen something so personal, just, you know, thank you. And this is so out of my mind. I'm thinking, what are you talking about? You mean the email? Is that what you mean? I said that to everybody. And it was just a funny thing. So he was a member of the LDS church. And so I was like, you know, there's a thing about you guys. You guys don't follow up with appointments, because I made these 3 appointments and no one came and da, 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 da. And so then he started crying again. He said, I just feel so bad. I've been receiving promptings to talk with you about, you know, the church, but I feel awkward because we're at work. We hardly, you know, hardly ever knew. Here you are, you know, trying to you know, meet with the missionaries. Well, I'm best friends with the mission president. You can come to my house and we'll, you know, get it set up. So through him was when I first started having the missionary discussions, or the first one, and still with my Baptist mind, I'm thinking it's just one and then you can join the church. So at the end of that, you know, they asked, do you have any questions? I said, so when can I get when can I get baptized? You know, so just kind of a funny thing. So needless to say, back in those days, this would have been, now we're crossing over into early 2002, you know, I was all gung-ho with, you know, joining the LDS church. You know, I was completely surrounded by just, you know, friendly people. I saw, you know, great examples of, and, you know, loving, you know, relationships. Now, this is where, you know, this is where I'd like to be. So that's kind of where I got started. And so it would have been February, actually, 2002, when I got baptized the second time to the LDS church. Yeah.
Nice. What a story. I can't believe that you had three no-shows, like no contacts from the mission.
Nothing. Yeah. And so that was when I found out after the fact, was because they just thought someone was pranking them because it seemed too easy. And I guess the townhouse that I was living in at the time, it was brand new, so it wasn't showing up on any, you know, maps. And back then we're talking MapQuest, you know, and so they just thought this is just a prank. But I kept calling.
Your directions.
right. Exactly.
Oh, man. Wow. What a story. So yeah. Then you were LDS and
yep.
How'd that work out for you?
Yeah. So I was, you know, LDS and just everything. I mean, it was just such a, you know, honeymoon phase, you know, just loved everything about it. I loved all the programs. I love the home teaching and visiting teaching and break the fast, you know. So back then I was, you know, even though I had, you know, I had been out the house, you know, graduated, been working on my, you know, living by myself for a while, you know, they moved me to the singles ward, which is a whole new concept, you know, for me. But I thought, wow, there's so many young people just like me who are, you know, trying to be faithful. I just loved everything about it. Definitely, you know, I was one of the, you know, tokens, one of the oddballs, because, you know, most of the people were, you know, Caucasian and I wasn't. But besides that, I mean, it wasn't, you know, a bad thing, but it was just very clear culturally for me growing up in the Black church. Things like, for example, was considered reverent, right, or much different. But I never associated that with the church, the LDS church. I associated that with just different culture, you know, which you get used to growing up here. Yeah, and during that time, I also was dating. So I was dating the person at the time was going to be my future husband. He grew up Catholic and definitely was not interested in, you know, being in church or any church. You know, one of those people who, you know, knows God, but not absolutely not interested in being a member of the church. And that was fine with me. So, you know, things got serious and we got married a couple years later. During those, you know, 2 years, I was, I guess, progressing in faith, I guess, within the LDS church, doing, you know, various callings. I remember we got married and then, oh yeah, so I was preparing to go to the temple. And this is the first time I encountered something that just kind of rubbed me the wrong way and I put it on the shelf. So I went through all the temple classes and, you know, everything's fine and I'm ready to go. And then the bishop calls me to his office and wanted me to, you know, talk to me about my preparations and what did my husband feel about it. And I'm thinking, why are you asking what my husband feels? I mean, we're married, we've talked about it, you know, doesn't, you know, whatever. But then I finally got it that he was actually telling me that I needed to get written permission from my husband to go to the temple because he was not a member of the church.
I've heard some people talk about that, but I have never actually talked to somebody that's happened to in.
Right. It had to be written. And it took me a while to get that that's what he was telling me because he was really kind and gentle. And I think in hindsight, he felt awkward even saying it, saying, knew this has to happen if you're serious about going to this temple. And I'm thinking, this is ridiculous, you know, whatever. So I'm calling him, just here, just talk him on the phone, you know, hi, hon, tell him, you know, that I can go to the temple, you know, but it was just this whole big deal. So then I had to wait and go and get the right paperwork and have him fill it out and sign it. You know, it was just kind of just awkward. It was just really awkward. And so that was probably my first not so blissful feeling, you know, about the church. It was kind of just so antiquated. And I thought, wow, you know, what's next? I mean, does he have to bring sheep or something for me, you know, to go to this temple? What is, you know?
Here's my offering.
Yeah, yeah. So that was still a thing. And, you know, when was that? 2004. That was still a thing. I don't know if they still do that. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, grown women. Yeah. And so, and then I thought, well, that's ridiculous. So then I had to ask the question, well, what if I had done this before we got married? Would you have needed my dad's permission? No, because you're an adult. But once you get married, as a female, I guess I wasn't anymore. So,
yeah. Nice. So did you end up going through the temple?
I did. And a few, probably weeks before, maybe a month or so before I went, it just so happened that the church, was it the Ensign magazine, had some articles or had a theme about the temple. And even though I had taken all the classes, and I remember my bishop at the time saying, you know, there's nothing, you know, secret about the temple. Everything's sacred, and there's nothing that will be taught in the temple that will conflict what you already know, you know, about God. It's like not some new, you know, revelation that's only, you know, shared in the temple. And when I read this, I read this magazine from the Ensign. It had one article about all of the ceremony, the ceremony itself, and talking about how, you know, people have outside the church have talked about it being like from the Masonic, you know, rites. But it said something about, well, you know, you may see similarities, but that doesn't mean it's from that. It, you know, it's just that it's so ancient that different groups may have pulled some of these things and some have used it out of the context, you know, blah, blah, blah. But it was kind of written very apologetically, like, you know, don't worry, you know, everything's fine, you know, you'll have a great experience in the temple. And I think I did. I was just, I remember being so excited, you know, my escort was, you know, just a sweet, sweet lady who took me through. And excuse me, it was packed that night because, you know, pretty much everyone in my ward who could come, could get in, got there. And of course, we're talking a much smaller temple than, you know, Salt Lake. So, so I mean, I had a great experience, and then certain parts were definitely like, oh, okay, this is what they're talking about. Okay, all right, you know, I'll go through the hoops, you know, whatever. But I'm not here for the physical, you know, ceremony. I'm here for the spiritual, you know, endowment. And actually, by the time I left that night, it was about a 45-minute drive from that temple to our house. And I remember immediately calling my husband and just being so excited and telling him, this makes me want to be a better wife and everything's going to be so great. And, you know, I'm so happy and blessed and, you know, all of those things. So, I think it was more awkward going in before the temple, you know, preparing and getting the permission slip than it was actually during the endowment. And I remember not sleeping that night because I just kept thinking about the whole thing, and it was just so much information. I remember I couldn't sleep. Mm-hmm. Yeah, from time to time at the beginning, you know, I would go, and at some point I had a calling to join the Young Women's presidency. And I remember going more, part of it because I was dealing with the youth, would go and do baptisms. But I just remember during that period just doing a lot of family history. I was just so excited about learning, you know, more about my own family and kind of filling in a lot of gaps and, you know, bringing in my own names. And, I just loved it. And I thought, this is great. This is a great church. I mean, you know, whenever we moved, you know, the brothers would come and help move. And, you know, just a one big, huge family wherever we went. It was just great. So, yeah.
I mean,
yeah, I mean, it just worked. Yeah.
Working, or if you have more.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm trying to think. When did things stop working? So I think there were some, I guess, d- just little one-off things in the back of my mind, you know, for maybe a couple of years that it wasn't a big deal, but just kind of like noted, you know, just little things like for example, the whole Kate Kelly thing. Actually, before I go there, I'll just give a general one before then. So being in North Carolina, where we are, there's a lot of universities. So we actually have a lot of young people who come here from Utah to go to med school or law school, or excuse me, a lot of men who come here from med school and law school, and their young wives who come with their little cute little babies. And so there's just a lot of young professionals in this area who are members of the church. A lot of them probably leaning more liberal than their parents, right, in Utah. Not all of them, but, you know, some of them. But then, you know, inevitably the parents will come to visit their new grandchild and visit church. And so then you just get little glimpses of what it must be like to be in Utah. And little things that would just irk me, like, you know, they'd come and visit. Oh, it's just so lovely to be out in the wilderness. And, you know, you guys have so much faith here. And I'm thinking, so what were you, you know, what were you expecting? Like, why are you calling us the wilderness when we're literally sitting here in the temple? Like, what, you know? And so I'm just learning a lot of little tidbits of that culture that from day to day I just never saw until little things like that would happen. And so, or just the whole thing, people will come and, you know, introduce themselves because people are friendly, want to meet each other, but they would define themselves by how far their family goes back into the pioneer heritage as part of, like, part of their value. And I'm thinking, I don't really care, you know, but if you want to talk pioneer, guess what? You might be a sixth generation pioneer. I'm a first generation pioneer, you know. It's just weird little things like that where it was very clear that there are just certain types of people, I guess, that are considered better or more valuable than others based on that sort of, you know, stuff that I felt from the faith perspective, it just didn't even register with me as a convert. So anyway, so that background. So then the whole thing with Kate Kelly happens and I'm just, you know, an outsider licking a frog, like, man, that's cool. Go on, sister. Let's, you know, go ahead, sister. And for some reason, someone mentioned it during Sunday school and someone's mom was there. And the first time I ever heard someone just say the most mean girl, vile things about another woman in church ever, my whole life. I mean, I can't even repeat what this person, this mom, said about Kate Kelly. And I mean, you would have thought Kate Kelly, you know, killed all of her children. I mean, just horrible, horrible things about her. And the reason why she felt it was okay to do it because, you know, she was leading, you know, ordained women. And I just thought, that's not right. That's not right. But I just remember being so shocked. It was almost like stunned. I didn't even know, like, I feel like I need to say something, but I didn't even know what to say because it was one of those things you don't realize how far apart you are from someone until they come out and say it, you know? And so then I think is when I really honestly started paying attention to all these little things. Like, why are all these little things that I notice, but maybe I'm immune to because I'm in North Carolina. From my perspective, that was a one-off, you know, wow, you know, but then in October, maybe before then, so let's say 2015, I just started noticing little things, like saw this article about this young woman or this young family. I guess the mom taught nursery and she got, I guess, reprimanded maybe for teaching something that was in the church essays. And I can't remember what the topic was, but I remember thinking, what are the church essays? What are they talking about? You know? And so then I go and find those and read them. And I remember being irritated that they're there, like a footnote, and it was never mentioned, never knew they were there. But then when I read deeper about this one particular woman, I thought, well, why is she getting reprimanded for teaching something that's, you know, on the church website? Well, because it wasn't in the manual, right? So that bothered me. And as you probably noticed, I speak out a lot sometimes on Facebook. And so I'm just speaking from my Protestant background. This isn't right. And why did they do this? And what do you think about that? Or whatever. And not knowing that I'm scaring off all my Mormon friends, you know, right? So, but I'm just like asking the question, right? Because I come from the background where if you see something that's not right, call it out, you know? So, And so I'm kind of asking all these questions, but meanwhile, I still feel happy in the church at this point. I'm actually, I think, teaching in the primary. Now a few years have passed, you know, my children are in the primary and I'm teaching one of the classes, and I was able to get tickets to go see General Conference. And I thought, this is awesome. You know, on Facebook, I'm going to General Conference. Who can, you know, host me? I can't wait. I'm coming. And so I go out there, first time in Utah, first time in Salt Lake City, and just super excited. And and I think my experience was kind of like Martin Luther. If you know the story of Martin Luther, you know, he grew up in the country, right, in Germany somewhere, or Austria, or whatever, and he goes to Rome for the first time.
Yeah.
That's how I felt. That is exactly how I felt. And I went from the highest high. I mean, even while I was there, I mean, I went and toured, you know, everything, all the places to be, and I'm just so excited. But then you just start seeing things like all of the ads for like cosmetic surgery and just all of the things like this isn't right. This is not matching what, you know, it was just a lot of little things, but all of it, I'm seeing it all at the same time that same weekend. Yeah. That was October 2015, right? So then I fly home and thinking, wow, that's a lot to process. I'm going to need some time to process this.
Utah.
That's okay. Yeah. But I'm thinking it's fine. I'm back in my, you know, my home congregation. Everything's fine. I've got plenty of time to process this. Then November 2015 happens.
I was like, okay,
yeah.
Here we go.
Yeah. So then it's like, okay, I'm going to have to deal with this now. You know, there's no more putting things on the shelf. And so I think that's when, yeah.
So for people who might not know, I'm
okay.
Assuming most of our listeners, because we've talked about it before on the podcast, but when you say November policy, November 2015, what are you specifically talking about?
Yeah. So, of course, I first hear about it on Facebook. People are posting the articles about it, but basically the church comes out with the new, I guess, policy, making it very clear, I think as a response to marriage equality, right? But making it very clear that if you're in the LGBTQ community and a member of the church, then thou shalt be excommunicated. Or this is so horrible that you should probably be excommunicated for that reason alone. And then furthermore, any children of that relationship are no longer allowed to be participants in any blessings or, you know, special, you know, programs. They can't be baptized, even if they want to, even if their own parents give them permission. They're not allowed to do that until they are over 18. And then only after, you know, once they reach 18, only after they kind of denounce that, you know, what they call lifestyle. And it was just too much. I remember, and during this time, I'm kind of skipping around, you know, I don't want to go into details, but during this time, you know, I was having issues in my marriage as well. And so after that wonderful, quasi-wonderful trip to Utah, you know, I thought, I'll have time to process this. Right now, I need to focus on my marriage, you know, I need other things to focus on. But all of this was happening at the same time, and it was just too much. I just remember just being so angry at God, because I'm thinking, I didn't even have to be in this church, you know, I wasn't raised in this church, you know, I felt like God led me to, you know, to that church, you know, with all my little experiences, you know, had such a great, you know, life the whole time I was in it, met such, you know, great people, you know, I'm not, you know, lesbian or anything, but I feel like I've always been an ally, and this was just too much, and it was just, you know, I was like, not only, I think if I hadn't had children, I probably would still be a member today, because I feel like I need to fight, you know, I need to fight. And I'm just going to stay and fight until they kick me out. But I think being in the primary, teaching primary, and, you know, seeing the, I forgot the little manuals, you know, where they kind of give the topics and give suggestions of what you make sure you share a testimony about. It's just like, this is not right, you know, and I cannot let my children grow up in this environment where they're being told the church is one thing, but then the church is actually doing another. You know, yeah. No, it's not happening, you know?
I've literally said the exact same thing.
Yeah.
I was in the primary too when we left, and I thought if this was just me, I could kind of create my own church in my head and just sit and deal with it and try to be an advocate and an ally and all that. But I just could not put my kids through that. I just thought I knew that I would be a hypocrite. And I'm not saying that people that say to have kids are hypocrites, but for me, that's how I felt when, you know, a few months that I was trying to stay and make it work, I just felt like my personality was being split in two and it was too much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so for that, so that's when things just started, just so angry. I can't express how angry I was, you know, because up until the point I thought, this church is true and the church is moving forward. And, you know, yes, it has a history, but so does the Baptist church have a history. I mean, all of these, you know, churches, you have a history, you know, but we're moving forward and this is moving backwards. And, yeah. And so I did a lot of yelling and screaming and having temper tantrums, you know, arguing about this, you know, this or that or the other. But my plan was to stay in there and we're going to sort this out, right? Because this is the true church and, you know, God would not let, you know, the true church, you know, do something like this. And I remember one time in one of my prayers, just kind of yelling at God, not yelling verbally, but just spiritually just yelling at him, just, how could you do this? How dare you? What about the children? What about all that Jesus has said about, you know, bring the children unto me? Just what about this? What about that? And I just remember just getting kind of an answer, just like, maybe this is not me. And that thought scared me because I thought, oh no, maybe I'm being influenced. You know, how could I think that thought? And so then I became perfect Mormon, started going to the temple often. Like, and from here, you know, it's again, almost 45 minutes just to get there, you know, having to get childcare because I'm, you know, becoming single and all that stuff and going several times a week. Like I thought, you know, I thought there's something I'm missing, right? You know, that's what my friends are telling me on Facebook, have faith and they'll understand, you know, why we have this, you know, so I'm doing everything I can to try to understand, still talking a lot of junk, you know, in the meantime, but just like, help me understand, God, because we have got to work this out. Okay. And, so a few months later, and I'm still in the, you know, in the, primary, and Elder Bednar had a, fireside in South America, I think probably Brazil. I can't remember. And, you know, there's certain apostles that I just, it would pique my interest because he was one of the ones that had, that has come to North Carolina since I've been a member, you know. And so, I wonder what Elder Bednar is talking about. And there was nothing really scandalous about the fireside, but afterwards he had a Q&A. He should not have had the Q&A. And so the first question, the very first, someone said, well, how can we as members reach out and show love to the gay, lesbian, you know, members of the church, you know, with this policy, there are a lot of people hurting. What can we do to support them? And they're translating it right from English to, I guess, Portuguese in the back, but he knew what the question was. And so his response was, well, there aren't any gay and lesbian members of the church. And that was it. When I read that, I thought, surely he didn't do that. So then I looked it up and found the video. So, okay, he did that. And so that night, I think it was like a random Tuesday, I said, that's it. I can't go back. I cannot physically go back there. And so at that point, I had already decided I'm done. But as a courtesy, I'm going to do a formal resignation. So I emailed my bishop and my stake president, who at that time used to be my bishop. So these are people I've known for several years. Both my bishop and my stake president had children in my primary class. So I knew the whole family, we all kind of knew each other. And I said, I'm just letting you know, I'm telling you this as a courtesy because you're going to need a substitute for me for Sunday class because I will not be there. I am not coming back. My resignation is attached. And that was it. Yeah, that was it. Yeah. And yeah, it was just so, so I guess I felt so exposed. I don't know what the right word is to do that, because I'd invested, you know, so much time and energy and love into this. And it was like, that's it. I can't do it anymore. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So I probably should have asked this question a while ago, but how did your family react to you becoming Mormon? I mean, because you probably had to have some tough conversations with them.
Oh, and, yeah.
You know, you intentionally chose this. You intentionally went against your family's long, long, long tradition to make this step and then to be devastated by the church. I mean, that adds a huge layer of just complexity onto a faith transition story.
Right. Absolutely. And I would say it was more of, I don't think I had any kind of negative pushback. I think part of it because a lot of people in my family really hadn't paid attention to the church because it was just so outside of, you know, kind of our universe. Of course, you hear on the news about Warren Jeffs, so people are like, oh, that's the polygamous church, and that I'd have to defend it. No, it's not, because, you know, that was stopped in the 1850s and blah, 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 and this is, you know. Well, and then I'd get, you know, like people, you know, weren't allowed to have the priesthood. Yes, but that was taken care of in 1978, and, you know, everything's great now. And, you know, remember in the Baptist church, they didn't want us there either. So, you know, everyone, we're all moving forward and we're all learning together, you know. So I definitely had those conversations. And it probably, you know, for my parents specifically, it was just kind of like, you know, do whatever, you know, feels right for you. They all came to my baptism, and I think they just wanted to make sure I felt that I was safe and wasn't being, you know, coerced or anything, and then I'm happy, and they were supportive of it. And, you know, I never stopped getting teased for, you know, for not drinking alcohol or sweet tea. Probably more the sweet tea. That's a thing, right, in the South. That's a big thing.
I love sweet.
And yeah, and I remember actually when the missionaries were like, you got to stop drinking tea. It was like, what? Like, why? What's wrong with tea? Like, and I took tea in all forms. I had the sweet iced tea. I would have the hot English tea, Earl Grey, with, you know, almost every day. And I actually went through a withdrawal when I stopped, because I was getting so much caffeine from all that. And then, you know, had the conversations. What is it about it? Is it the caffeine, or is it tea, or what about herbal tea? What about, you know, you know, all those conversations. And, you know, why does God care? You know, all of that stuff, you know, I'd worked through and worked, you know, my close friends and family through. And then all of a sudden it's like, you know what, I'm done with this church, you know? And I think that was part of my anger too, because it was like, I feel like I had done so much to intentionally, I just felt betrayed, you know? And I just, especially during that time when, you know, when people were, you know, just so devastated and committing suicide and just so many horrible things. How could, you know, someone let that happen, you know, and then just kind of talk it off as, well, we must have faith. We must have more faith to understand it better. Think eternally. I was like, well, you know what? I'm going to think eternally over here. I need to be separate.
There. I'm just
yeah, exactly.
So then yeah. From there, I mean, how did you find Community of Christ?
Yeah. So then, you know, I'm, you know, single, you know, separated, you know, went from being completely immersed into this church family to not having anything. And I still wanted to be, you know, a member of some kind of community. And I thought, well, I can go back to the Baptist church. I mean, it's family church. So, you know, send me back. But I was like, no, it's not, you know, I knew that some things about me had changed, you know, some of my beliefs. I thought about, you know, in the past, you know, I'd attended a Unitarian church and, you know, met all the different Protestant faiths and everything. And so some of it just, I already knew that I wouldn't be interested. Probably the two groups that I was considering would be Lutheran. Interesting, Lutheran, right? And we have some, what is it, United Church of Christ, UCCs, I guess, around here. Yeah. That seem to be very just, you know, kind of affirming, welcoming all people. But yeah, so anyway, I got online again and just kind of looked around to see what was around in this area. And I thought, you know, what I really need is just some kind of Mormon light, you know, group. And so I think I maybe Googled that or something, and it popped up. I think it was like some discussion group popped up, and then someone was talking about CFC. And so it took me a while to figure out what is the CFC, you know? And so then when I finally figured it out that was the R LDS Church, it kind of gave me pause, because I remembered back now, way back when I was taking the discussions, I remembered seeing the R LDS Church website when I was looking at the LDS website, because for some reason at the time, both websites looked very similar. And so I wish I had not gone by what someone told me about the church, and I had just gone to see what people say about it themselves. But there's two things that I was told. Oh, well, see, they're always trying to, there are two things. One, oh, they're always trying to copy us. See, even their website is trying to copy us. You know? Then two, the other one is, oh, they believe that you have to have a blood relative, you know, a son to be prophet, and we believe in revelation, and see, you know, see how true we are, that sort of thing. And that was it. That's all I ever heard. And so I just never, you know, looked into it again. And in hindsight, looking back, I think that the church that I thought I was joining, like as far as my beliefs, was actually more of Community of Christ, you know. But I just didn't go deep enough, you know, back when I was, you know, church hopping. So I don't know if that answers that question. But at any rate, you know, I just started looking a lot online on the website. You know, there's a lot of videos on there. And it was just, I just remember doing a lot of crying. And I thought, am I crying because of the marriage, or am I crying just because of the change, or, you know, is this mean something to me? And I just could not stop looking at all these different things on the Community of Christ website. And then one day I thought, well, you know, we'll go visit, you know, we'll just go peek your head in. And I went, and there was only like one car in the parking lot. And I thought, maybe it's the wrong day. You know, is this the right time? Are they, the website said it started at 11, but maybe that's not right. So we didn't go that time. So then I went another time. And I said, okay, there's two cars. Maybe, you know, I'm just going to go in and see what's going on. Because it might be, you know, and so it's definitely a lot smaller than I was used to. I'd learned that actually most of the people parked around the back. So there were more people there than I thought. But just from the first time I stepped into the doors, there was a sweet lady sitting there, you know, by the door passing out programs. And it was just like I was home immediately. She just welcomed me in. It was almost like she's Paula Deen fairy godmother, you know, just super sweet and just so welcoming. Everyone, you know, getting up to introduce themselves. Again, it's maybe 20 people in the whole building. And so, and when I walked in with my two daughters, now we've increased the number of youth by, you know, 200%, you know. Right. And so, you know, there's a bunch of, you know, grandparents, right, in this congregation. Okay. So just the joy of seeing youth in there. And it was great. And I can't, I think when I walked in, they were finishing up Sunday school. So I saw a little bit of that and then moved over to the church service. And just, it was just everything about it, I just felt, you know, just welcomed. And when I explained this to some people, you know, one of the terms that's discussed a lot in Community of Christ is being a sanctuary of Christ's peace. And actually, when I first heard that term, I didn't really get it. It didn't identify with me, because I always thought of sanctuary as the building, the room. But this, until this particular day, where I truly felt like I was like a spiritual refugee. Like coming just, you know, I just remember just sitting there and just, you know, they would have the program and I would just sit there and cry, you know, for an hour and then we'd go home, you know. And I just realized that for the first several weeks, you know, I didn't go regularly, like, you know, here and there. It was just, I would just sit there and just cry, just, you know, and they welcomed that. They would just let me, you know. And then a few months later, they're like, well, would you like to come? They would start inviting me to things. And then a few months later, they started asking me to do stuff in the program, in the worship service. And so just very gentle. I think they really let me do kind of my healing there before they, you know, asked me to do things. And I just loved that about it too, especially coming from, you know, a faith where you've got to work, you know, part of your value is what you can do. But here it just felt like I'm already loved because of who I am. if that makes sense. So, yeah.
Yeah, that does make sense. And it's so interesting to hear you, to kind of backtrack just a little bit, when you made the comment of when you joined the LDS Church, it seems like, looking back on it now, you kind of assumed that you were joining a church like Community of Christ.
Yeah.
And I know that a lot of people who have found Community of Christ from the LDS Church, in their head, they've kind of created their own version of the LDS Church that looks very much like Community of Christ.
Yeah.
So if they say, you know, what would their ideal church look like or whatever, what would that experience be like? They often are describing Community of Christ. And when people do walk into a Community of Christ congregation, or when they attend an online worship service or whatever, there is kind of that sense of coming home, because I think that a lot of us have just kind of created that experience in our brain and in our hearts, and then it just clicks. So
it just clicks.
But I do think there's a lot of people that would relate to that. So,
And then for my children, during this time, my oldest was actually turning 8, which was a big deal too, because it's like, right when it's time for her to be baptized, I leave the LDS Church, you know? And so she had been raised thinking and doing all this preparation. She's expecting, you know, for someone to ask her to be baptized when she turns 8. And so she starts asking me, well, Mom, I'm going to be 8 soon. What are we doing? You know? And so I kind of, you know, encouraged her to wait, because I really wanted her to understand that this was a different church and what about it is different, and, you know, make it be a real decision versus a rite of passage. Right. And one of the things that she had commented, one night, because again, very small, very small. I can't stress how small it is. Most of the time when we go, my children are the only two there during this time. And then in the summers, like, some of the other members, their grandchildren would come, that sort of thing. And so when they would have, they had this one teacher that takes the youth out and teaches them any lesson during the part of the church service. And so one day I just asked her, how's it going? Oh, it's great. It's fine. And she kind of said, you know, we don't do as much stuff, but I really like it. And I said, well, what do you like about it? And my little 8-year-old said, well, I feel like everyone is really kind to me, but it's different. And I was like, what do you mean? She said, well, I feel like they're kind to me because they want to, not because they have to.
Oh,
yeah.
Pick up on that.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I'm like, wow, she gets it. Yeah. She can feel it. She can feel the difference. Yep.
Wow. Wow.
And I said, you know what? That's exactly how I feel. That's why we're here, because I want us to be in a place where we feel, you know, what people say about us or to us, we feel authenticity, and that I want us to feel like we can be our true selves, whatever that is, as well, without any, you know, judgment. So, but during that time, they didn't really know the real reason why we left. Now that they're older, I've explained it to them and they're like, oh man, that sucks. Yeah. I'm glad you took us out, you know, good riddance, that sort of, but at the time I don't think, it would have been appropriate. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. So this was how many years ago that you found Community of Christ?
So that would have been actually 2016 when we started kind of going. And then it was 2017 when I actually got confirmed a member. And then actually just last fall, both of my girls got baptized. Oh, yeah. Nice. So what, last year they would have been 8. Yeah. 8 and 10. Yeah.
Nice.
But yeah, we love it. So,
so what does church life look like for you now? What kind of things, have you been able to get involved in things? Are your kids involved in the congregation at all? Like, what does it, just a day in the life of your family with your congregation, what does it look like?
Yeah. I would say for us that we, show up for the kind of the 11 o'clock Sunday service. I know they have Sunday school, you know, every Sunday at 9:30. We just don't make it that early, and I'm not trying to. That's what it is. We have you know, again, during the service, one of the other women takes the kids out to teach a lesson pretty much while the sermon is happening in the church service. I love monthly potluck. That's where I really have gotten to know everyone, where everyone brings food, and we have just a big long table set up. And this is a smaller congregation, so our potluck is in the same room where we have our sanctuary. Like, we move the chairs and set up tables and have potluck there. In the summers, we have Vacation Bible School, which is a remnant from my experience growing up Baptist. That was a big thing for my childhood, having Vacation Bible School. So I have been involved with that and have been one of the Vacation Bible School teachers. I think the first year now, I'm kind of helping plan it each year, and that we kind of open up to the community here. I play the flute. So a lot of times I'll play the flute during worship service and, for example, women's retreat or reunion. This year, the first year, I am on the committee to help plan our women's retreat for our mission center. Nice. The past few years we've been going out to this beautiful, actually I think it's a Methodist-owned kind of retreat conference center up in the mountains outside of Asheville, and we stay in this historic hotel. You know, kind of imagine Dirty Dancing, you know, the old kind of mountain retreats. Yeah. And so we go out there and have that, and so I'm on the committee this year, so I'm learning how that goes. One thing that we desperately need to do, and I've kind of raised my hand to do it, is work on the website for our congregation. Mm-hmm. Especially as someone, you know, myself, who initially that's all I did was look online to learn about Community of Christ. I'm sure I know there's others out there. We do have kind of a local Facebook group of Latter-day Seekers for the Carolinas, which is pretty quiet, but I guess I'm an admin for that. But recently, actually last fall, I went to a kind of a training for the Latter-day Seeker ministry. To just train people on how to better be prepared for the Latter-day Seekers and accept them. And so I went to that, and actually that's where I met Barbara Carter. So this is a side a side tangent conversation. So I met her for the first time, and she's totally awesome, right?
Her episode for PZP actually went live today. So
oh, okay. Oh, good. I want to listen to that. So anyway, I was telling her about how I've been really wanting to have an excuse or have a time, something to take my kids to the temple and Independence in Kirtland. I've never been, and maybe we can go like summer vacation and go up and do it. And I was telling her how that was what we were going to do this past summer, but then schools changed and we had to, you know, we switched to year round school. So we couldn't do it anyway. So she said, well, you've got to go to Kirtland. They're having this Advent retreat, in December, and this was like going to be the next week. You got to go. And so I was able to go to that, and it was a wonderful experience to go to Kirtland. So a little sidebar conversation. But anyway, so I came back from that rejuvenated and done this kind of Latter-day Seeker training. So I'm feeling that, you know, this is where I think I can, you know, really lead building that ministry and the website. Because I know every once in a while people will come in and visit one time. And I know some people have reached out to me just a DM asking about it, mm-hmm. who clearly don't feel comfortable asking in public because, you know, of that stigma of asking questions in the LDS church. But, you know, here, even though we have enough people here to support an LDS temple, it's just very, because the Community of Christ congregation is so small, there's definitely a fear of coming there and then bumping to someone else you might know, you know, and kind of being outed as a investigator. Yeah. And so people, you know, it's very obvious when a new person comes, we're that small. So, yeah. So I'm hoping that maybe with the website, we can just have a lot more information and, you know, point people to the online, you know, community and things like that, where people can just learn more in a safe place.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Wow. That's awesome. Yeah. I love that your little girls are seeing you do all of this stuff.
Yeah.
You're mm-hmm. able to be involved in ways that you wouldn't have been able to be involved in the LDS church. And this
absolutely not. Yeah.
And yeah. I love, again, that they recognize that the congregation loves them not because they have to love them or they're obligated to. It's just what people do. People love
Right. them. Right. Yeah. So, the person, the woman who, there was a woman who baptized both of my girls, and she actually was kind of the lead for the Vacation Bible School. And it was very special for her because, you know, she grew up in Communion of Christ and remembers back when women did not have the priesthood. Yeah. And she had commented how she remembered when her daughter wanted to be baptized, she couldn't do it because she was a woman. And so she was recently ordained last year. And so she was able to do it. It was just very special for the whole, you know, community, you know, not just for my girls, but for her as well, you know, to be able to participate in that. So
yeah, what a full circle moment.
Yeah.
So I guess, what are your hopes for Community of Christ? I mean, coming from, you know, like having such a rich religious background and having gone to a lot of different churches, you've seen the way that church is done in a lot of different places. So what are your hopes for Community of Christ? I mean,
I wish there was a way for more people to just know about it. And I've said this often, you know, because, like, for example, now we've got these business meetings and I'm just like, I can't believe we're having a business meeting. This is so awesome. Like, it's like, I want to like shake the members to say, you don't know what you have. Like, this is so, do you realize how awesome this is? You know? And it's like, I don't want to say they take it for granted, but it's just so normal to them. They yeah. don't just realize like all the little things of how not just the programs, but just how the church, you know, is organized is so special. And I think the long-term members don't realize that. And I wish, my dream is that for there to be a way where that realization would happen so that others could see it, you know? Yeah. And I don't know what that looks like, but I just feel like I'm sitting on a treasure. It's almost like not fair that I have access to this and others don't, you know? Yeah.
Yeah, I know that feeling so well. We had a business meeting soon after we started attending a couple months, and people were almost apologetic about it. Like, oh, sorry, you've got a business meeting. I'm like, oh, what? Packet of the budget, and we can talk about it, and we can debate it, and we can change it. And I mean, I ate it up. I was really excited.
Yeah. 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 And even like with my daughters, this past summer was the first time we were all able to go to reunion in our mission center. And it was over Labor Day weekend. So it was the first time my girls really got to meet a lot of other kids from other congregations. And, you know, the kids had their own little camp stuff and the adults had their camp stuff. So I would go all day and not see them. And then at dinner time, my youngest like ran to me, hugged me. She said, Mom, this church is awesome. I like it way better than the church we normally attend. And I was like, this is actually the same church. Yeah. She's like, really?
That's so funny.
Yeah. This is awesome. Yeah. Yeah. And so now she can't wait to go next year and, you know, reconnect with her friends. So I'm just, at least for my family, I'm just looking forward for us as a family growing together, learning more about, you know, kind of the Community of Christ way. But I just wish there was a way that we could, you know, share it more with people outside who I know are looking, but, you know, you don't want to, I think there's, at least for me, that sometimes you feel like, oh, you know, is this a gimmick? You know, is this too good to be true? Or you're just trying to do a bait and switch on me, you know, where it's not overly zealous, you know?
Yeah.
So anyway, that's my quandary, so.
Yeah, I know. I totally get it. Yeah. I kept waiting when I was early in my seeking months. I just kept waiting for the big skeleton in the closet to appear. Okay, when am I going to be devastated? Because I've been devastated before. And
right.
Not to say that the church is perfect. Not to say right. that the community's perfect. But man, I have.
But it's real. But it's real. I think that's the difference. It's real. Yeah.
Exactly. And people are just sincere and usually willing to say when they get it wrong, and collectively there's somebody that will catch you if you fall. And yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I've yet to run across that big skeleton in the closet yet. Knock on wood. Don't let us down, church.
Yeah. But you know, transparency is key, and you know, you can't help, because you know, I'm still friends with, you know, you know, Mormon, I still have my Mormon friends and things. And so you hear about stuff every once in a while of what's going on, you know, in the LDS church. And it's almost like, you know, I don't think people are even doing it consciously, but it's kind of like, see, we're getting better. Maybe you can come back now. And it's like, that ship has sailed, honey. You're like, we're way past that now. Yeah.
Yeah, we've had people comment of, you know, what would it take to get you to come back? And we're like, literally nothing. Come up with a big old checklist. Believe me, they cross it all off. Like, we have simply moved on.
Yeah. I've said it. You know, it's probably sacrilegious. That even if Jesus came back and said, Kelly, it's okay now. You can come back to LDS Church. I'm like, seriously? Seriously, Jesus? Like, I'm good. I'm here.
I got you over in this
group. Yeah.
Well, if it's sacrilegious, I laughed. So there.
Yeah.
Oh, well, I want to thank you for sharing your story. And, you know, it's so interesting to hear the faith transition stories from other people, because there's so many connecting points to my own story, to other Latter-day Seekers that we've had on, that just this path that's brought us all to the same place. It's just really exciting. And there's just so much shared understanding. Mm-hmm. But is there anything else that I didn't ask that you wanted to say, and any final thoughts?
I guess just a comment. It actually, I think, is from a previous podcast with Zach. I can't say his last name. Harmon
McLaughlin.
McLaughlin, yeah. So, you know, I was listening to it in my car, and he said something about talking about churches, like attendance getting really small, and maybe even a congregation, you know, having to close. And I wish I'd written it down. I'm going to have to go back and listen to it now. But basically, he was talking to the effect of us really believing that it's God, you know, that can lead this church, that we don't have to do anything like create new programs or do new shiny things to try to bring people into the church. And we even have to be willing to even make it seem in the short term to falter. But just like, you know, I think, you know, just like Jesus, you know, he even, you know, had died for 3 whole days, but then he resurrected. And sometimes that if we just let go and kind of let the Spirit, you know, breathe, you know, even let it go to the point where we might think is a failure, that opens up a void for new creation. And so I really believe that. And I just love that imagery. And I think we're going to see that in Communion of Christ. So, yeah.
I think so too. And it's an emotional journey, but it makes me excited because I think the caliber of people that we have that are hanging on is, it's good news for the church. So
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
Yeah. So anyway, glad to be here. But I think with the journey that I've been on, if I had, you know, learned about Community of Christ, you know, 15, 20 years ago, I probably would not have joined. Like, I think I needed to go through the journey I went through to really appreciate where I'm at now. And so I think I have, you know, that real joy. And I, so, yeah. So, you know, it's kind of cliche to say, you know, enjoy the journey, but this one I needed this journey to get to where I am now.
So. Yeah. There's a lot of wisdom in that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Be able to look back and recognize that that was a needed part of your journey, I think, is wise. So,
yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, thank you so much. I'm so glad that we were able to find time to chat. And now, I mean, this is the first time that we've talked face to face, even though it's Zoom, but
exciting. Thank you. Thanks so much. Yeah. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Project Zion Podcast. Subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcast, Stitcher, or whatever podcast streaming service you use, and while you are there, give us a 5-star rating. Project Zion Podcast is sponsored by Latter-day Seeker Ministries of Community of Christ. The views and opinions expressed in this episode are of those speaking and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of Latter-day Seeker Ministries or Community of Christ. The music has been graciously provided by Dave Hines.